distribution. It's occurring as I speak of House Joint Resolution 2, Third Reading Amendment Number 3. Now, I would ask the sponsor of the first Amendment Number 1 to withdraw that amendment, and then we will move Amendment Number 2. Since Amendment Number 2 deletes the enacting clause, we will move it and consider that after Amendment Number 3. And I'll just pause for a minute to make sure that actually we'll go ahead. I'll recognize Representative Gray for the first part of this. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to withdraw Amendment Number 1 to Joint Resolution Number 2.
Okay, thank you. Representative, Third Reading Amendment Number 1 to House Joint Resolution 2 has been withdrawn. Amendment Number 2 will be heard after Amendment Number 3. We'll pause for a few moments to make sure all members have that delivered. Okay, members, I think so. This is not a corrected copy. This is a separate amendment. And once again, if you look at Amendment Number 2, that deletes the enacting clause, and that those amendments generally come at the end. And so we will consider these in that order. So with that, Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move Amendment 3 to Joint Resolution 2 and ask for favorable consideration. And a couple introductory remarks on this amendment. I really do want a balanced budget. It's actually one of the reasons I got involved in politics, controlling spending, my concern for the out-of-control spending at the federal level, and my desire that our state doesn't go down the same path. And the Article 5 process, if done properly, is something that I think I could support. But this approach that we're using to the Article 5 process is an approach that is tremendously problematic. The approach of tacking ourselves onto 27 hodgepodge applications that are over petitions that are over four decades old, that have different generic language across those applications. They're really all over the place. It's a bad approach when our Constitution, our Second Amendment rights, our First Amendment rights, all our Constitution is on the line. And I think this problem is tacitly acknowledged in the effort that we've seen to bifurcate House Bill 51 and the penalties attached to delegates that will attend this Article 5 convention from the resolution itself, which is the petition to Congress. And no mention in that petition is laid out for limitations on delegates and the call to the convention itself. And the call to the convention is what the Congress is going to read. It's not House Bill 51. And so to not have that there is problematic. And I don't think by any means this fixes it. But this amendment is an attempt to improve the resolution. So basically, looking at the amendment adds House Bill 51 to the resolution with two extra caveats on the back end. So just going through the amendment here, it adds a Section 3. And then it lays out that in point A, no delegate shall have authority to vote to allow consideration of an unauthorized amendment. That's directly from House Bill 51. Then in B, it says that delegates will vote so that Wyoming has one vote in the convention, and each state has one vote, which is a key principle here. And in C, it says that any violations, those votes will be null and void. This is, again, directly from House Bill 51. In D, it lays out the oath that the delegates will take. In E, it lays out the Secretary of State procedure to certify the selection of delegates. In F, that's where the procedure where the House will send three delegates and the Senate will send three delegates is laid out. And a little bit of addition here to Part F and the problem in Part F, and one of the key problems with an Article 5 convention. It's not clear if every state is going to have one single vote. And yes, that's the way our original constitutional convention worked. But that wasn't an Article 5 convention. We've never done that. And yesterday, it was very interesting. Our colleagues laid out with vehemence that the Congress is just going to set a time and place for this convention. They're not going to lay out the rules for this convention. Well, then presumably every state is going to be sending different numbers of delegates. And you have states that will not have passed a resolution like this. And those are states that really tend to not be sympathetic to our Second Amendment rights, et cetera, et cetera. Like the state on our West Coast that has over 30 million people. And they're not going to have a resolution that they passed. And they're going to be saying how many delegates they want to send to the convention. And they're going to say, we have 60 times the population of Wyoming. Why don't we send 400 delegates? And our colleagues admit that the Congress isn't going to set the rules. There's just going to be a time and place. So you're going to have, all of a sudden, meeting at this place that they set, thousands of delegates. Wyoming's going to have six there. And they're going to say, we want all those delegates sat, one person, one vote. And our colleagues admit that the Congress isn't going to set the rules. And it'll be interesting to see their response to this. Well, if the Congress does set the rules, it lays out the problems that we talked about yesterday. So I ask you to pay attention to point F. Point G lays out the Secretary of State notifications if any delegate involved doesn't follow their duties. And point H lays out the Attorney General has the ability to carry out the provisions in House Bill 51 if that passes. Then the definitions are laid out, and then on Section 5 on page 3 is a key part of this amendment.
Representative Gray, you have 30 seconds.
Okay, it says that our application is revoked, and I'm not saying that this is enough of a protection, but it does say it's revoked if the provisions in Section 3 aren't followed or if Wyoming doesn't have one vote, if every state doesn't have one vote and Wyoming's one of those votes. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Clem.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I appreciate the amendment that was brought forward. In fact, I don't disagree with the spirit of it as far as the content. However, if you recall, there's been over 570 of these applications that have been made so far from various states. And you might ask, and two-thirds of these applications have to be turned in order for there to be a call. And out of 570 applications that have been made, why hasn't there been a call? And it's because the applications have to be the same. When we talk about a balanced budget amendment, we're talking about a same application that goes from state to state, and 28 states have passed a same application. Now, if we add this language in here, I would simply ask, does this change that application? And I would say that it does. And in fact, I would go on and ask, can the bringers of this amendment prove that it doesn't change the application? Because if we add this language in there, then all of a sudden we don't have a similar application as the other 28 states. What we have now is a completely new and separate application. And it won't count toward the aggregate. Or if it is, it'll probably be litigated in court. So while I agree with the spirit of this, I would ask you to reject this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Lindholm, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So this application to Congress is not a delegate instruction bill. All right? These amendments have nothing to do with a call for a convention. Congress doesn't need to know how Wyoming, our state, will commission its delegates in order to call a convention. That's a separate piece of legislation that was brought by myself and others. And yet, that same piece of legislation has been voted against by the opposition. But yet now they want to insert that piece of legislation into a petition, a balanced budget amendment petition. I don't think that's quite in line. And also think about this. If this was truly the concern, and this wasn't just a poison pill, would they not have inserted this language into the prior resolution that has already passed this body? They never even attempted to. So brothers and sisters of the 64th, reject this amendment. This amendment is nothing but a way to kill the legislation. It does nothing for the legislation. Vote on a balanced budget amendment resolution. Thank you.
For your first time, Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really do appreciate the heart behind this amendment. And on it, at its face value, it looks very good. And I was going to support it. But what comes to my mind is the fact that the previous bill actually puts into statute permanently for any sort of resolution that may ever come from this body. It puts it permanently in there. And so that actually applies to the bill that we're on right now. And the other thing, too, is when you look at this, if you were to add it to this bill alone, it would only, by definition, apply to just this issue right here. And so the way that we have already worked with the previous bill, that working in conjunction with this bill, we definitely have already addressed the issues at hand. And so this, one could say, is putting more gilding on the lily, and it's not necessary. Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of this amendment. The basic intent of the resolution is left intact. It is a call for a convention to consider an amendment to balance the federal budget. This amendment represents the sideboards that we've got to have in place. There's nothing in this amendment that undermines the call, yet it means everything to the state of Wyoming if we are going to participate in a constitutional convention, because I am so worried that the Congress is going to take it upon itself to dictate the rules of any convention, and the sideboards in our call will allow Wyoming to challenge those rules and to get to a convention on our own terms. And I urge your support of this amendment. It does nothing to undermine or abrogate the call for a balanced budget amendment constitutional convention. Support the amendment.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against this amendment, I'll make this very short, very sweet. In order to call for the convention, the language has to be almost identical in every single call. If we add this amendment, you are effectively defeating this piece of legislation. That is all there is to it, plain and simple. On and against this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for amendment number 3 to the House J2, this is what I was talking about yesterday of allowing a more than one amendment to come before it. This body has been talked about there's only going to be one amendment heard. Well, if there's only one amendment going to be heard, and that is truly where you want to go, this will put those sideboards in place where that cannot happen in Wyoming. I hope that you will support this. I will support this amendment, but I will vote against the House Joint Resolution 2, the bill. So on and for the amendment. Thank you.
Any other members for their first time? Any members before the sponsor for their second time? Anyone for their second time? Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So looking at this amendment, you can go to Section 5 at the back of the amendment. That would be impossible to enforce because the body that governs in our capital would have already issued the convention call, and why our state could not withdraw its application at that point. The application would have been served its legal purpose, and it would cease to exist or be relevant. at that point. So if we're seriously going to be looking at the situation, realize that this is a joint resolution. This is not Wyoming. This is not Wyoming law. This is not statutory language. If we want to put sideboards and checks on our delegates, then we've got to put that in statute. And that's another piece of legislation. That is not a joint resolution. This is a call to Congress, specifically for a balanced budget amendment. Put it in statute if you want to put sideboards on your delegates. Absolutely. In fact, go ahead and look through the legislation and find the word delegate. Find it anywhere in there. It's not there. That's because this is not for delegates. This piece of resolution is specifically and only for a balanced budget amendment. So vote no on the amendment. Vote aye on the bill. Thank you.
Representative Clem, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'll be brief as well. It's been said that sometimes you need to hear something two or three times before it sticks. And I said it once. A good representative that sits next to me said it. And I'll say it one more time. If you vote for this amendment, what you're essentially doing is you're making a completely new application. It will not be counted toward the aggregate 28. In fact, if we wanted to do this, every other state would have to go back and change their application. And so this is what we like to call a poison pill. And if you're against this legislation, vote aye for this. But if you want to see this legislation pass, I would ask you to vote no on the amendment and aye on the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else for the second time? Second time before the sponsor, Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So responding to these points, first of all, the characterization that this is a poison pill is enormously troubling. The language across states is hugely different across the 27 states that have filed these applications. It's aggregated over four decades. The language is very, very different. And that's the problem with this approach. Even if this passes, is that the language across states is so different. So the Congress, the convention, isn't going to know what to do. Now, there was an attempt, it was called the Compact, that was brought before last time that attempted to start from zero and have the same language. That's something I could support. But unfortunately, starting at zero takes work. And it's not a fun thing, but we've got to get this right. This is not a poison pill. This is along the lines of these different applications that have different wordings. And this would be just the same thing that other states have done with having different wordings. And the Congress is going to have to evaluate all these different applications that have different wordings when they do this, no matter whether ours is different or not. So that characterization is really problematic, and it's thrown around a lot on amendments, but you got to look at the specific case here, and this is not a poison pill. This is along the lines with what other states have done. Another key point here that I really wanted to draw out with this amendment is that they've said there's so many protections on this convention, and yet we put some simple limitations into the petition. And suddenly, it's done. You can't do it. And do we really feel comfortable going back to our constituents, where our Constitution is going to be on the line, where we can't even put simple delegation limitations into the petition because of what the other 27 states have done? That's really problematic. The Compact did not take that approach. It had limitations in there. Again, it's not fun to start at zero. There were three or four states that had adopted this. It's tough work, but we need to do this right. And one of the reasons I brought the amendment is I wanted to draw out that argument because they've said over and over that there's so many protections in here. But we put these simple things that are already in statute that they proposed, and it's a no-go. And that gets to another key argument. Why do we have to put this in a petition and not in statute? The petition is what the Congress is going to read. The Congress, our legislative branch, isn't going to pull out House Bill 51 and say that's binding. The petition is what is binding to some extent. Now, they might go off that as well. I also note that there was nothing addressed on the numbers problem, which is one of the things I wanted to draw out in this amendment as well, the fact that our state to our West Coast is going to probably send 400 people to this convention because they haven't brought a resolution. So when the call happens, then those states are going to have pass their own pieces of legislation. They're going to say they have 60 times what our state has, our beautiful state. Our colleagues have said that the legislative branch isn't going to set any rules for this convention. They're just going to set a time and place. Well, there's kind of a circular logic here. Then you're going to have a time and place with thousands of people showing, and we're going to be outnumbered by states that don't agree with us on our Second Amendment rights, on our First Amendment rights, on our Constitution. I ask that you vote for this amendment. I think we need to go back to our constituents and say that we did this. While this doesn't fix the issues, because of the problem of all the different languages within these petitions, and we'll be doing the same thing, but it's happening anyway. We need to be able to go back to our constituents and say, we tried to put some limitations on delegates at least, even if it doesn't fix the petition. Thank you.
We are voting on third reading amendment number 3 to House Joint Resolution 2. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 3 to House Joint Resolution 2 has failed. Representative Gray.
Mr. Speaker, I ask for a roll call vote.
We have a motion for a roll call vote. I need to know who the second was. Representative Jennings. We'll pause while we get the computer over on the right page. We will, so if we could have, we're ready to call the roll, so order in the House. Please proceed, Chief Clerk.
Roll call on the amendment. Allen?
No.
No. Baker?
Aye.
Aye. Barlow?
Aye.
Aye. Biteman? No. Blackburn?
No.
No. Blake?
No.
No. Bovee?
Yes.
Aye. Brown?
No.
Burkhart?
No.
No. Bird?
No.
No. Clausen excused. Clem?
No.
No. Connolly?
No.
Court?
No.
Crank?
Aye.
Aye. Dayton? No. Edwards?
No. Yes.
Aye?
Aye. Yes.
Eklund?
No.
No. Ayer?
No.
No. Flitner?
No.
Freeman?
Aye.
Aye. Furphy?
No.
No. Guru?
No.
No. Gray?
Aye.
Aye. Greer?
No.
No. Haley?
No.
No. Hallinan?
No.
No. Halverson?
Aye.
Aye. Henderson?
No.
No. Hunt?
No.
No. Jennings?
Aye.
Aye. Kinner?
No.
No. Kirkbride? No. Larson Lloyd.
No.
No. Larson Dan.
No.
No. Lindholm.
No.
No. Lone.
Aye.
Laux.
No.
No. McGuire.
No.
No. Madden.
No.
No. McKim.
No.
No. Miller.
No.
No. Nicholas.
No.
No. Northrup.
Aye.
Aye. Obermuller.
No.
No. Olson.
No.
No. Paxton.
No.
No. Pelkey. Excused. Pipirinen.
Aye.
Ponell.
No.
No. Salazar.
Aye.
Schwartz.
No.
No. Summers.
No.
No. Steinmetz.
Aye.
Sweeney.
No.
No. Walters.
No.
No. Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
No.
No. Zawanitzer.
No.
No. Mr. Speaker.
No.
No. Are there any changes? Freeman. Aye to no. Other changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 15 aye, 43 no, 1 excused.
Having failed a roll call vote, third reading amendment number 3 has failed. We are now on third reading amendment number 2 to House Joint Resolution 2. Representative Edwards.
I move third amendment reading to House Joint Resolution 2, amendment number 2, and I will lay it aside at appropriate time. I'd like to say that this last vote kind of throws a new thing into what I was going to say, because I am wondering really whether the intent is to have only one amendment brought forward versus the idea of whether it's going to be a wide open convention versus a one amendment convention by this body that is bringing, or if that's what they've been told by the others. There has to be a call of 34 states to make a call for a constitutional convention. Congress must make that call. They're the only ones that can do it, and they must do it whenever the 34 states have made their constitutional convention call, and they will choose the time and the place it will happen. They will choose the manner of and what kind of delegates that there will be that are chosen. It will not be the states that chooses that. It will be up to the Congress how that is decided. And the 435 members in Congress will decide if we have one or if we have more than one vote, according to whether it be by population or if it be by state only. It will be Congress's choice. Convention, when it is convened, will decide the rules of that convention, whether they will hear one vote of one amendment only, or if they will open it up to where everybody will be able to make amendments. Those amendments that are brought forward, and I believe it will be amendments, as I've told you before, there are several people out there that have a constitution that they'd love to replace ours with. I've been fighting this for quite a few years of those that would like to destroy our constitution. One of those was taking place in the Peace and Prosperity Initiative that they had a few years ago. The ratification, when it happens, will either be two ways. One, the state legislature will adopt them, or it will be a ratifying convention of the people. On the first convention that we had, where we got our constitution that we have today, it was a ratifying conventions of the states. It was not the state legislatures that made that. Right now, Congress has enumerated powers where they are already limited by the Constitution of what they may spend money on and what they cannot spend money on. They have passed that, going beyond what they were supposed to by a piece of legislation that happened back in the 1920s. And I believe that was allowed to happen after they took away our 17th Amendment for the states to appoint senators. This bill, if it happens, I guarantee you will be more than one amendment, and the choice of delegations will end up not being in our favor. And I hope that you will reject any idea of having a constitutional convention, period. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone for their first time? Any representatives for their first time? Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Really quick, I know I've spoken a lot. I just want to say that I think the amendment and the opposition to that is enormously revealing, the fact that that is considered to be a poison pill and reveals the problems with this process. I'm for a balanced budget, and a lot of people are concerned about that or for a balanced budget, but this process is not correct. Thank you.
Anyone else? Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really appreciate the fact that we were able to listen to these two bills together. The one that went before answers the questions that have been raised at this mic in the last few minutes. And so that should lay those to rest. And now this bill gets to operate with that bill in mind. And so I just want you to remember that, because when people talk about this bill now being dangerous and they're questioning motives, the motives were firmly established in the previous bill. So those are the sideboards. Thanks.
Any other members for their first time? Seeing none. Any members for their second time before the sponsor? Representative Edwards.
I hope as you all vote and you vote with a clear conscience, I hope that I will never have to say I told you so other than right now if it does happen. And I agree that we should make our congressmen in Washington, D.C. live responsibly. I don't believe this is the route to do it in. I don't want to take the chance of opening up the Constitution because I'm afraid of what may come out of it. I know there's several people that would love us to have a parliament like they do in the rest of Europe. Removing our states and replacing them with provinces like they have in Canada. I don't know if any of you knew it, but whenever our president that was back in 1972, whenever he was in office, he had intentions of eliminating the state boundaries and setting up as provinces, but he never got there. I'd always thought it'd been fun to go to Montana that had done away with their meets and bounds to get a speeding ticket up there and tell them to prove it that I was in Montana. But I always thought that would be stupid on my part because it wouldn't matter whether they had meets and bounds or not. I'd still been guilty. But anyway, back to this subject. I hope that you will look at our Constitution that we have, and I hope that you love it enough if this goes forward that you will be ready to fight, as our forefathers did, to give up your lives to bring it back if it's lost, and that you would also be willing to give up your livelihood. So many people today are only worried about how much money they have, and that is nothing. You look at all the people that want to come to this country. We have something that no other country in the world has. They want to come here and live here. Unfortunately, the last bunch that's been coming in don't want to assimilate. But our founding fathers made this the greatest nation on earth, and it is our responsibility to make sure it stays that way. That's why we were elected. And I hope that you will vote with me against this House Joint Resolution number 2. And at this time, I will remove the amendment and allow the vote to happen. Thank you.
Okay, House Joint Resolution 2, the third reading amendment, number 2, has been withdrawn. So we're on, the question is on the joint resolution. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker. Baker. Barlow.
Aye.
Aye. Biteman.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Aye. Blake.
No.
No. Bovee.
No.
No. Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Aye. Bird.
No.
No. Clausen excused. Clem.
Aye.
Aye. Connolly.
No.
No. Court.
Aye.
Aye. Crank.
No.
Dayton.
No.
Edwards.
No.
No. Eklund.
Aye.
Aye. Ayer.
Aye.
Aye. Flitner.
Aye.
Aye. Freeman.
No.
No. Furphy.
Aye.
Aye. Giroux.
No.
No. Gray.
No.
No. Greer.
Aye.
Aye. Haley.
Aye.
Aye. Hallinan.
Aye.
Aye. Halverson.
No.
Henderson.
No.
Hunt.
Aye.
Aye. Jennings.
No.
No. Kinner.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Aye. Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Aye. Larson Dan.
Aye.
Aye. Lindholm.
Aye.
Aye. Lone.
No.
Laux.
Aye.
Aye. McGuire.
Aye.
Aye. Madden.
Aye.
Aye. McKim.
Aye.
Aye. Miller.
Aye.
Aye. Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
No.
No. Obermuller.
Aye.
Aye. Olson.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey. Excused. Piperinen. No. Ponell.
Aye.
Salazar.
No.
No. Schwartz.
No.
No. Summers.
No.
No. Steinmetz.
No.
No. Sweeney.
Aye.
Walters.
No.
Wilson.
No.
No. Winters.
Aye.
Aye. Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Aye. Baker.
No.
No. Are there any changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 35 aye, 23 no, 2 excused.
House Joint Resolution 2, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Joint Resolution 2 has passed the House. We are at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole for consideration of the following bills on general file. House Bill 54, House Bill 131, House Bill 80, House Bill 92, House Bill 70, House Bill 96, House Bill 142, House Bill 32, House Bill 73, and House Bill 36.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Representative Steinmetz.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 54, Chairman Madden. Oh, the reading clerk will read the bill. Excuse me.
House Bill 54, introduced by Representative Lindholm. Taxable value of agricultural land. An act relating to ad valorem taxation.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Sorry.
Excuse me.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 54, Taxable Value of Agricultural Land, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Connolly, Dayton, Furphy, Larson, Paxton. Noes, Representatives Hallinan, Kenner, Madden, Overmuller. Signed, Representative Madden, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation of Bill Number 54 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I ask you to vote no on that because of an error.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So House Bill Number 54, you're looking at a standing committee amendment, and a lot of you, I'm sure everyone, has received an email from your good assessor saying this is really bad, and that's why we've got a committee of the whole amendment that fixes the situation. It was a good catch on our assessor's part. That was not our intent to have that in the standing committee amendment. So it's a good fix, easy fix. And with that, I'm gonna go ahead and call for the question on the standing committee amendment. Please vote no on the standing committee amendment.
All those in favor of the standing committee amendment, say aye. Those opposed, same sign. The Standing Committee Amendment fails. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So I'm going to go through the bill real quick with your Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 by the good Chairman of Revenue and explain what we're looking at. Well, first of all, this whole discussion and this piece of legislation came about from some of the multiple situations we looked at throughout the interim in the Good Agriculture Committee. And that Agriculture Committee, we talked a lot about beekeeping, and does beekeeping qualify as agriculture? And indeed, I think we all can all agree that it is a form of agriculture. But we got to talking, and it actually, there's a lot of different types of agriculture that our statute doesn't necessarily reflect what is agriculture. I'll argue that there are different types of agriculture nowadays than there were 100 years ago. 100 years ago, we had pretty much just ranches and farms, big acreage operations. Now we've got high tunnels on smaller pieces of acreage, but indeed they're still agriculture, and they should be counted as such. So what this piece of legislation does, and I'm going to refer to it with the Committee of the Whole Amendment so that everyone understands where we're going, and I'd really... I'm going to go ahead and explain it as is right now. So the owner or lessee of the land has derived annual gross revenues of not less than, and we strike out $500, because $500 in gross revenue for agriculture, I think, can pretty well be done, and I think we're capturing a lot of people that indeed are not agriculture by that. And we insert $5,000 from the marketing of agricultural products. We strike the rest of the line produced on the land, basically stating we're only qualifying you for agricultural, and this is not an exemption, assessment of agricultural land as long as you can actually prove that you're marketing agricultural goods, which is the intent of the legislation and the intent of the legislature. And this further defines it, brings it down to what the intent is meant to be. We had a lot of good support from all of the Ag Unity out there as far as those associations. They're all behind it as amended with the current amendment. And with that, I'll go ahead and stand for questions. I think the good Chairman of Revenue, actually, I'm going to go ahead and move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1
and stand for questions on that.
Question having been called on the standing committee amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Oh, I thought he said. Excuse me, committee of the whole amendment. So we're voting on the committee of the whole amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. The amendment passes. We're back on the bill. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I'll just give you guys some examples of what we're looking at. So we're looking at agricultural land out there that is not very big but still can do a lot. And in this state of Wyoming, there's a raspberry outfit right in the center of the state that you can go and visit, and they do 2 acres of raspberries. Now, this individual operation, they used to run cows, 250 head of cows. 250 pairs. So a lot of you out there are familiar with ranching and agriculture and what that takes. They were able to replace their income off of 250 head of cows with 2 acres of raspberries. 2 acres of raspberries produce 60,000 pounds of raspberries, and I will argue all day that that, my friends, is agriculture. In fact, this individual turned his calving shed into a licensed kitchen. Took a lot of work, but is a licensed kitchen where they make raspberry sauces and jellies and those types of things. So agriculture is being done. It's not always being captured or recognized by our statutes. And I'd ask you to view this as an update to our statute to gather in the legitimate agriculture that's out there.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I'm a little confused here on this. And so if the bringers of the bill could help me understand this a little bit more, because I'm looking at, in our green statutes here, and how agricultural land is assessed. Okay, and I'm going to read here, starting at the top of page 2, it talks about contiguous or non-contiguous parcels of land under one operation owned or leased shall qualify for classification as agricultural land if the land meets each of the following qualifications. And it talks about those qualifications. It's not listed in there, but Roman numeral number 1 in the statute says the land is presently being used or employed for agricultural purposes. And then we get to the changes here, too. So the land is not part of a platted subdivision, except, so if it is part of a platted subdivision, here's the following conditions, and here's the amendments here. The parcel is 35 acres or more and otherwise qualifies, or... And then we get to this new thing that is not discussed here in statute. So now we got a new area between 5 and 35 acres of land. And we say in order to qualify that you have to derive an annual gross revenue of $5,000. But in the statute here, I just want to read this. It says this, if land, and this is Roman numeral number 3 in our statutes, if land is not leased land, the owner of the land has derived an annual gross revenues of not less than $500 from the marketing of agricultural products, or if the land is leased land, the leasee has derived an annual gross revenues of not less than $1,000. So we're talking about 35 acres or more, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm hearing in 35 acres or more, you have to just make $500 or $1,000, depending on if you're leasing it or not. But if you have between 5 and 35 acres, you're going to have to meet a threshold of $5,000. And I'm trying to understand the disparity here. And if the bringers of the bill could help me understand that, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Lindholm?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That specific portion is now struck, and I know that's confusing because you're looking at the bill, but with the committee, the whole amendment that we just adopted, we don't have this 5 to 35-acre aspect anymore. So we've got continuous or non-contiguous parcels of land under one operation, owned or leased, shall qualify for classification as agricultural land if the land meets each of the following qualifications. And then we immediately jump to Romanet 2, the land is not part of a platted subdivision. And that stays put, absolutely. But then we get rid of all that new language under 1 and 2 there, where the 35-acre and otherwise qualifies as agricultural land. That's not part of our bill any longer. The only part that's part of our bill now is we don't take into account the acreage. As long as it's not part of a platted subdivision, we don't take into account the acreage. We're just saying any amount of acreage, as long as you're not part of a platted subdivision and you're doing agriculture and you can prove $5,000 worth of marketable agricultural marketing of agricultural products, then you're good to go.
Representative McGuire.
Thank you very much. I would like to speak against the amendment, and I would like to talk to you about unintended consequences. And right now, the law is not perfect, but it's working for people. And for example, if you have ever driven from Casper to Shoshone and you've seen the land just to the west of Casper, that's where my dad's ranch used to be. And I've watched as little parts and pieces of that have been sold off. It's broken my heart. And every time you go through there, there's another double wide and somebody's got a dirt track and there's a couple industrial buildings. And the problem is that there are a lot of people. We have a good friend of the family. She still has a little chunk of land out there, and she just wants to leave it alone. She doesn't want to have anybody graze it. She wants to leave it for the antelope. She doesn't want to have anybody put a building on it or anything else. And right now she can afford it when it's taxed agriculturally. But if you change the tax rate on that, then she's going to be forced to sell it to a developer. And the unintended consequence is that then you're going to have one more piece of land that gets cut up and somebody puts a double wide out there and we get more crowding and less agricultural land in total. It's not just about whether it's an ag operation. The question becomes for a lot of people what the tax rate is. And, you know, there are a lot of people that have a little chunk of land and they just want to be left alone. And if they have to open the gate and let somebody go through there with some cattle and charge them $501, then fine. And that's fine. The other part of it is, if you look at, for example, and I'm going to use the BLM grazing rate, for the last 10 years, the BLM grazing rate was $1.35 per animal per month. So simple math, and they changed that last year to $1.69. So simple math is that's $20.28 per animal for 1 year on that piece of land. Well, if you have a $5,000 threshold, that is 247 cattle that you would have to put on that piece of property at the BLM grazing rate in order to make enough money to qualify for an ag operation. And that's just too high a threshold. There are a lot of people that still have a little bit of land left, and they just want to keep it. And if they don't necessarily want to put some cattle on it or whatever, then fine. But don't change the tax rate on them. Just let it be. So I would vote or urge you to vote against the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Lone.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd just like to take a moment to say I oppose this bill as well. And would like to explain a little bit about why I first read this and I was confused by what it was saying. Was it saying we're trying to create more agricultural land or are we trying to decrease agricultural land? Because there are plots of land that are 35 acres that are subdivided or accounted as subdivisions. So there's potential to have unintended consequences with that as well. So I polled my constituents and asked several of my constituents what they thought this bill read. And for all six of the people I called, all six had different answers. So my concern is that this bill is providing more ambiguity than clarity, and I would recommend that we vote no on this bill and go back to the drawing board. Thank you very much.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So I'm going to offer a little bit of pushback on the argument that folks got agricultural land or got their land and they just want to be left alone. Listen, this is an agricultural assessment. This is not an exemption. There's three types of ways agricultural land can be assessed. Okay, there's crop, irrigated crop, and rangeland. Now you're either doing agriculture or you're not. We're not providing that assessment for folks that are raising an elk herd. That's not the way this statute is intended. If we want to lower property taxes for these for those roaming elk herds and the property that are raising deer herds, then we need to have that statute in place. This is not the area to do it. This is agricultural. So, also, I would like to note that there will be a second reading amendment coming. There's a good catch by some of you that we inadvertently did not get rid of lines 14 through 20, so it's just duplicative on page 2. So it's duplicative. Sorry about that. I'll be bringing a second reading amendment. Thank you.
Just for a little bit of clarification, so we have disposed with all of the amendments and we're on the bill, so this vote will be for the bill. So question having been called, all those in favor of Representative Madden's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 54 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. If you are in favor, would you please stand? Those opposed, please stand. Pursuant to H.R. 66B, House Bill 54, having failed a vote, is indefinitely postponed. Oh. Excuse me. Pursuant to House Resolution 66B, the bill, having failed the voice vote and standing division vote, is required. Having failed the standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
No.
No. Baker.
No.
No. Barlow.
No.
No. Biteman.
No.
No. Blackburn.
Aye.
Aye. Blake.
Aye.
Aye. Bovee.
Aye.
Aye. Brown.
No.
No. Burkhart.
No.
No. Byrd.
Aye.
Clausen excused. Clem.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Aye. Court.
No.
No. Crank.
No.
No. Dayton.
No.
No. Edwards.
No.
No. Eklund.
Aye.
Aye. Ayer.
No.
No. Flitner.
No.
No. Freeman.
No.
No. Furphy.
No.
No. Guru.
Aye.
Aye. Gray.
No.
Greer.
No.
No. Haley.
No.
Hallinan.
No.
Halverson.
No.
No. Henderson.
Aye.
Aye. Hunt.
Aye.
Aye. Jennings.
No.
No. Kinner. Kinner.
Aye.
Aye. Kirkbride.
No.
No. Larson Lloyd.
No.
No. Larson Dan.
Aye.
Aye. Lindholm.
Aye.
Lone.
No.
No. Laux.
Aye.
Aye. McGuire.
No.
No. Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Aye. Miller.
No.
No. Nicholas.
No.
No. Northrup.
No.
No. Obermuller.
Aye.
Aye. Olson.
No.
No. Paxton.
Aye.
Aye. Pelkey excused. Piperinen.
No.
No. Parnell.
No.
No. Salazar.
No.
No. Schwartz.
No.
No. Summers.
No.
No. Steinmetz.
No.
No. Sweeney.
Aye.
Walters.
No.
No. Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
No.
No. Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
No. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Vote is closed. 20 no, 38, 20 aye, 38 no, 2 excused.
Okay, we're getting all the bugs out now. Pursuant to H.R. 6-6B, House Bill 54, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 131. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 131, introduced by Representative Sweeney. Disposition of lottery proceeds, an act relating to the Wyoming Lottery. Madam Chairwoman, your committee number 3, revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 131, disposition of lottery proceeds, respectfully reports same back to the House, with the recommendation that it do pass, with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Furphy, Hallinan, Kinner, Larson, Madden, Obermuller, Paxton. Noes, Representatives Connolly and Dayton. Signed, Representative Madden, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill 131 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. And I will explain the Standing Committee amendment. Ladies and gentlemen, this is about the lottery, and specifically the amendment is about the distribution of the net returns from the lottery that are occasionally distributed by the lottery commission, okay? And it goes back to there's not a lot of us who have been around since that lottery passed, but it goes back to when we passed the lottery, we needed to have a distribution back to the counties that was reasonable. And at the time, we were thinking, well, we'll just distribute it according to the proportion of sales taxes collected, because we didn't have any record on lottery proceeds, okay? So that's what happened. If you look on page 2 of the bill, you get down there to line 14, you'll see the net sales taxes collected in each county and what that percentage is, what that bears to the total sales taxes. Well, we didn't foresee how this would work out when we got into the actual distribution, because the first 2 or 3 years there wasn't anything distributed because they had so many fixed costs or some bank loans that they actually had to pay back. So now we've got a record, we've got a track record, and all this amendment does is say we're going to distribute back to the counties according to the amount of lottery tickets that are sold in that county relative to the total amount of lottery tickets. So, you know, if you have a big county, or I should say a county that sells lots of lottery tickets, they'll get proportionately more. If you have some counties that don't have any, are very few lottery tickets sold, they'll have a smaller distribution. And, you know, the kind of thing you run into if you use sales taxes is that you're just simply distributing all of the money to the high sales tax counties, which happen to be either mineral counties or the tourism county up in the northwest part of the state. And clearly that is nonsensical from the standpoint of logic. So that's the Standing Committee amendment, and I'd urge your support of it.
Representative Sweeney?
Would you like to, could we vote on the standing committee amendment before we get to your question, or is your question on the amendment?
I'm going to have him explain the bill. He's waiting to explain the bill.
Okay. Well, let's dispose of the motion on the standing committee amendment first. So are you ready for the question on that?
Question.
Okay. All those, question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Okay.
Chairman Madden.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, I turn the explanation of the bill over to the new legislator from District 58, who is in the back corner there.
Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If it pleases this body, I bring before you Committee House Bill 131, disposition of lottery proceeds, and ask for your favorable consideration. The bill is pretty simple in its construction. On page 2, you'll note lines 6 through 9, the language removes the $6 million cap on the distribution of the lottery revenue and requires the state treasurer to distribute revenues to the cities, towns, counties at least once a year. The more important is the repeal on page 2, line 22. The repeal is that section of current law that sends any lottery revenue over expenses beyond $6 million to the common school account in the permanent land fund. The effect of the bill is that all revenue after expenses generated from the lottery will now be directly distributed to cities, towns, and counties. A couple of things for the committee to note. First, as of January 10th, the lottery has transferred $1,431,346 to the state, which means they are on pace to transfer about $2.9 million for the year. Last fiscal year, they transferred a little more than $2 million to the state. This is well below the $6 million cap in the bill, and as the fiscal note points out, that means the bill has no effect on the common school account. The fact of the matter is that when the cap was put in place, the estimates on the amount of money, as the chairman referenced in the amendment, the lottery would produce in revenue was well in excess of $6 million. That hasn't materialized and won't likely won't, absent some additional gaming opportunities. This bill does two things then. First, it recognizes the reality of our population and the lottery's revenue in the short term. Quite simply, there is no reason for a cap. Second, in a very long term, it has potential to provide for an additional revenue stream for our local governments. Last year, my county received about $20,000 from the lottery, and I think that this amendment further clarifies and helps the situation that has already been passed. As the lottery continues to improve its games and its marketing, with the help of local governments now, and the amount will grow. But even if it grows beyond $6 million, it will likely never amount to enough revenue to impact our school deficit. I hope you will favorably consider this bill. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, thank you. And I am concerned about the repealer and the loss of potential money in the future. Going to schools, and maybe a second reading amendment will get us that discussion. But I think it's a discussion this body should have: is should these dollars go to towns and counties, or should some of that money be split between towns and counties and schools? And in a time when our schools are facing funding shortages, I guess everybody is, but I think the school situation is more dire right now than most. So I would ask the good bringer of the bill, did he contemplate what those impacts long term, and did he think about any alternative that might split that money in the future between towns, counties, and schools?
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm at this point somewhat ambivalent about this bill. I voted against it in committee, but honestly, I love the Standing Committee Amendment. The Standing Committee Amendment really needs to be there in terms of what's happening with the revenue and the taxes from the lottery, and that was a real good save. The reason that I voted against it is that the reason for the bill, like what the counties really want, is to remove this cap that was long fought after in the bodies when we passed the lottery. You know, this was a compromise that it went over 10 years. I think I was here for 5 of it. It had been going on for years. It went to conference committees, and ultimately it was decided to have this $6 million cap, that the first $6 million would go to cities, towns, and counties, and then after that would go to the Common School Land Fund. That was the compromise, and we all went, okay. And here we are, just a couple years later, we have the county coming in and saying, we're not anywhere near that $6 million, but take it off, and we want it all. And their reasoning is they'll work harder if there's no cap. They'll work harder at promoting the lottery if there's no cap. And I asked them, I said, well, why aren't you working hard now? You should be working hard now. And they kind of nodded their head and said, yes, but then the answer was, well, we'll work harder if you take away the cap. And that's not a good enough reason to me, is that we'll work harder if you take away the cap. And then the second was, because we're nowhere near the $6 million cap, and there's no anticipation that we'll get to it for many years. And the second reason was, well, if we ever get close to it, we know that the schools will come after it, which then gives me pause. And then we have, as the good majority whip said, well, you know, we need to think about schools. We're not coming anywhere near close to that cap right now, but what if we do? And even the association said, right, we don't want to get near that cap because we know what will happen when we get there. There will then be that argument. And so I'd urge us to think carefully about it. But then again, that Standing Committee Amendment is real important. Thank you.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thanks, Madam Chairwoman. I was going to sit down for a second because I was agreeing with everything, and then it kind of went the other way on me. But everything objective, the former speaker just said, I completely agree with. Some of the subjective things, I think I just maybe would present the other viewpoint. So we have had this discussion in this body, and we did have it for many, many years. And this body, the 60 of us, made the determination that this money should go to cities, towns, and counties. The body across the hall, as you heard, did not agree with that. But let me give you a little more information on that. We ran the studies, and I think you'll see some second reading amendments. We ran the studies that it should be about $6 million a year. We based it on several other states that were roughly our size, roughly the gaming that we were thinking, and it was going to average $6 million in revenue. So the question was, if that was the number that all the studies said we were going to get, that's the price point we put at the compromise. Now, in actuality, after 4 years, we are not hitting but a third of that number, and the projections now have been revised, and it is unlikely we are ever going to hit that $6 million cap. And so I guess I would submit that we went along with the compromise on this bill knowing that cities, towns, and counties would get the first $6 million, and everything after that would go into the Common School Land Fund. Now that it appears we're never, at least in the near future, going to hit that number, I do think there is some dismay on behalf of, you know, your local governments that, you know, that was part of this compromise, that we agreed that that was going to be the first $6 million because we thought there'd be some good years, we may get to 7 or 8, and we've never got there. So now that we've, you know, promised the local governments that $6 million, but that was certainly the talk all through the discussion. This is a good bill. I do love the Standing Committee Amendment, and so I would ask you to move the bill forward, but just for some more information that this body originally was going to give all the money to cities and towns, and it didn't kind of work out that way in the conference committee, but this is hopefully, at least from this side of the building, a reparation to try to make our promise good.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm one of the few that are still remaining when we passed this bill X number of years ago. And just for me, I passed it because it was entertainment. At the same time that we passed this bill, the land of Lincoln was in a serious financial problem, and things haven't changed very much there. But what they were doing is they were promoting the lottery as the way to balance the budget. And I don't want to see Wyoming getting into a situation to where that we're so worried about where the money is that we're balancing budgets and focusing streams and promoting the lottery to a point to where that it may cause people who have gambling problems to do even more. So I like the amendment too, but I don't like the bill.
Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The explanation, I think, that the chairman of corporations gave some historical perspective on how all of this came down. We certainly don't want to do anything to hurt education with anything that's going on. But the simple fact of the matter is, even with that mega Powerball where our state income, well, the lottery corporation's income really increased substantially during that time because ticket sales and our percentage went up, even with that rare occurrence, we still see the distribution, even with that, is way off the $6 million mark. And so I ask that you not lose focus of that. And what happens 20 years from now, I don't know, but I would submit to you in my very novice experience here as a freshman trying to learn all of this, wouldn't it be more prudent to go ahead and move this forward? And then if at some date in the future we are getting close to that $6 million, we come back to the body and say, is there a different different factor that we should take into consideration for education? If that's 10 years from now, terrific. But in the meantime, the cities and counties could really go after and help, better help market in their own locales. So,
is there any further discussion on the bill? Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 131 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Let's do that one more time. Those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, please say no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. I'm going to have to make you stand up again. Please stand if you are an aye vote. The vote is 34, so House Bill 131 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 80, Vice Chairman Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 80 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. Before we get into the piece of legislation, Madam Chair, I'm going to hop into the Standing Committee amendment really quick. The Standing Committee amendment is model language. This is a model piece of legislation. This was some stuff that was inadvertently forgotten to be inserted into this legislation. So the Standing Committee fixed that. And then, unless anyone has any questions about some of that model language, I'll stand for questions.
Yes, and we will have the reading of the bill now.
House Bill 80, sponsored by Representative Zwanitzer, Transportation Network Companies, an act relating to motor vehicles. Madam Chairwoman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 80, Transportation Network Companies, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Lindholm, Vice Chairman.
Please continue, Representative Lindholm.
I think I've got to move that again just to make sure everything's right. So I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 80 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. I'll go over the Standing Committee amendments just real quick again. Model language that was inadvertently left out. This is a model piece of legislation conforming to Wyoming statutory law. I'll stand for questions on the Standing Committee amendments.
Are there any questions on the Standing Committee amendment? The Standing Committee amendment number 1 has been the question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, please say no. The Standing Committee amendment has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll turn over the explanation of the bill to the representative from District 43.
That's where I'm from.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. House Bill 80 is Transportation Network Companies. Hopefully this morning you all had a handout passed out. It has a 101 on the top, and it has my District of 43 on it. That information relates how these TNCs work, how they operate on your smartphone platform, and the information they have to carry and requirements placed on them. Because I know you all had over 300 emails regarding the bill, I might skip over the purpose, but I will go through the bill with you somewhat briefly. You'll admittedly see in Transportation Network Companies we're placing this in the motor vehicle statutes. However, the bill itself is primarily regarding insurance. Basically, to allow these TNCs to operate in Wyoming, we have to structure our statutes to delineate insurance coverages. So the crux of the bill is actually on page 8 in 3120107, and that basically delineates when the driver is on their personal insurance policy and when they're on a TNC's company's insurance. So there are other provisions in the bill on pages 6 and 7. These are just the requirements placed on an individual if they want to drive for a TNC. On pages 12 through 14, we have basically provisions for our current auto insurers on whether or not they want to exclude coverage. So some insurers want to be, insure TNCs, and some want to be excluded and don't want to have their policies get wrapped up with TNCs. Page 15 and 3120109, these are all the required disclosures that a TNC has to provide to its drivers. Page 16, we're making all the TNC drivers independent contractors as long as they meet all the provisions of that section if anybody has questions. There is a little bit of discussion there on page 19 that basically says that these TNCs are self-regulating. So if you did have a concern or a problem with one of these companies, you need to contact that company directly. And Section 3 makes the bill effective immediately. I'd be happy to answer any part of the bill. It is a model legislation. We would become the 49th state to allow TNCs to operate in Wyoming. And I'm checking to see if anybody has a question.
Seeing no, is there any discussion on the bill? Mr. Garreau, would you like to discuss the bill or move your amendment? Representative Garreau.
Madam Chairman, I have an amendment for Committee of Whole Amendment Number 1 I'd like to move.
Go right ahead. Thank you.
I move a Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, which you should have in your box.
We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Representative Garreau.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. What this amendment does is, as it's been explained by the chair of the committee, this is a form bill, and this is some form language from our airports. One of the questions that arises with this type of transportation mode in some of our airports, and it's truly this amendment would give each airport the choice of whether to enact their own rules and have these transportation companies subject to their rules. In other words, leveling the playing field for our local airports and our municipal airports. And I stand for any questions.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we looked at this model language during the standing committee and ultimately rejected it based on the premise that this is protectionism. This is saying a certain area, these certain individuals get to collect a fee off of these certain transportation network companies. Vote against this amendment. This amendment is not needed. There are other states out there that do not have this language, and these transportation network companies are still in their areas. So vote against.
Representative Greer.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. I just want to ask this question. So as I see this, we could, an airport could distinguish between a taxi service and one of these transportation network services, and we'd leave that discretion there. So I don't think I like that. But the question I do have is, in the absence of this amendment or another amendment, would the same fees apply? So that if a taxi service is charged a fee or a limousine service is charged a fee, will these be charged a fee?
Representative Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would be happy to answer those questions. Currently, how I understand it is that each airport does have their authority under the FAA regulations to establish or charge a fee on basically anyone who's driving in. So if they wanted to charge you to drop off a passenger in their airport, they certainly could. Depending on the municipality, they have either a contract or a rule in place. Notably, we have some busier airports than others in the state, and they are allowed to now charge a taxi company a pickup or a drop-off rate in those municipalities. So in talking about competition, I'm neither supporting or not supporting of the amendment. There may be some municipalities that would need to rewrite the rules or want to rewrite their rules to make it a more level playing field. In other jurisdictions around the country, some airports have said, we don't want any of these TNCs within 10 miles of our pickups, and they have exclusive contracts with taxi cab companies. It is difficult to regulate in other jurisdictions, so I don't know if that murkied it up or that helped explain it, but there is some concern in several airports that they might have to rewrite some of the regulations on taxis or limos to maintain competition or have a more competitive environment or get rid of the current regulations they have on those companies if this amendment didn't pass. How's that for being fair and trying to represent both sides?
Representative Garreau.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think, in my view, and the folks and the good representatives that have brought this amendment to you, one of which is a member of the committee, and the good chair of that, or vice chair of that committee is right, this was discussed, and then to be fair, it was voted down. But in further reflection, some members have felt differently, and that this clarifies the situation, and that's why we brought it forward. Thank you.
Mr. McGuire, Representative McGuire.
Thank you very much. Just a further comment about the airports. All of the airports in Wyoming are self-funding, and they have to support themselves. And so, yes, they do charge a fee to taxi companies and other things because they have no ability to tax. And also they have part of that administrative fee is to administer and make sure that the people who are coming to pick people up are doing it in a safe manner and that they know who they are. For example, you've got people coming in at 11 o'clock at night. They go out to hail a cab or an Uber or whatever. They want to, I mean, we all want to have some kind of a policy that they're going to be picked up by somebody who's safe and who is known to the aircraft or to the airport authority. And so, yes, they have designated parking areas for the cab companies and probably now for Uber. And they control those people, and they make sure that they know who they are because, hey, you don't want grandma coming in at 11 o'clock at night and getting picked up by whoever. So they just want to have the ability to cover their costs, to administer who's coming and going at the airport.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the bringer of the amendment, I guess I have a question about the practicality of this because – if I'm being dropped off by a cab company, I probably show up in a yellow car or green and white checkers or some sort of thing with a sign on it. But if I have hired one of these, if my husband drops me off, you know, we'll show up in some dirt-covered vehicle with Wyoming plates and nobody looks at me. If I hire my neighbor with one of these things to also show up in a dirt-covered vehicle with Wyoming plates, how will they know that I have hired the person versus that it's my husband? I mean, are we supposed to all pull up and roll down our window and show our papers in some sort of form? Or I don't see how this is actually a practical thing.
Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So I serve on corporations, but can't kick high enough to get to the shin of the co-chairman. So if the amendment was discussed at corporations and we or the discussion went that way, the Uber representative indicated that this was not going to be a big deal for them to implicate or to implement, and that it's been done. And to the good lady's question, it's my understanding, being very technology challenged, but that when you click for a ride to be picked up at the airport, that they know right then and there that that's the location. Uber does by GPS that that's the case, just like in this bill has also been added sales tax that the cab drivers. To the additional point of cab companies, some airports do assess fees for the pickups, but I think in most cases where it does happen, it's more like an annual fee. So, in fairness, Madam Chairman.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a quick reminder that we're talking about transportation network companies, of which there are multiple, but we don't use proper names on the floor. So you may have got emails from one that a certain TNC loves Wyoming hashtag, but let's just call them TNCs.
Representative Sports.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On in support of the amendment, it's not just about collecting fees. And the airport I am most familiar with, I can speak to. And the way it works there, in a very short period of time, quite a few planes land almost simultaneously, and hundreds of passengers disembark, which as they then go out to get a lift back to wherever they are going, there's a lot of confusion in the area where pickups occur, and it actually does require some regulation by the airport to make sure it's done in an orderly fashion. So beyond the fees, there are regulatory issues that I think are important. Thank you.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we're blurring the line a little bit. So if we all go back and look at the amendment, no provision of this chapter shall be construed to limit the rights and powers of a commercial service airport as defined by 49 U.S.C. Section 47-102 to do any of the following. They've already got the authority to do this. Why are we putting it in this law? They've already got the authority to do it. It wouldn't be a big deal. Vote no on the amendment. It's not needed.
We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The amendment has failed. We're back on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Vice Chairman Representative's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 80 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 80 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 92. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 92, introduced by Representative Larson, payment of wages upon termination, time limits, an act relating to labor and employment. Madam Chairwoman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 92, payment of wages upon termination, time limits, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Representative Zwanitzer, Chairman.
There is a committee amendment. Chairman, you have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 92 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, and this was brought by one of our good committee members, and we couldn't figure out if it was in the right place in statute or not. The agency went back and looked and determined it's already covered in other statutes, so we do not need the standing committee amendment. So at this time, I would move that amendment, but also ask you to vote no.
You have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The standing committee amendment number 1 has failed. We are back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I will turn it over to the good representative from District 54.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For those of you that have been here previously, this is the exact same bill as we ran last year in House Bill 127. And for those of you who are new to this, I will give you a little history. In 2016, we passed House Bill 82, which changed the requirements for an employer to pay employees who were terminated or who left their employee voluntarily on the next regularly scheduled pay period. And the reason for that is we're finding more and more, particularly small businesses who have their payroll taken care of in other communities or remotely, and this has really become problematic for them. So this that was passed. In doing so, we found out that there are some companies in the state of Wyoming have a presence in all of the other states. An example of that may be a transportation company that delivers your packages to you at Christmas and the other 365 days of the year, who have a collective bargaining agreement with their employees on when they will be paid on termination or when they voluntarily leave. And what we found is that the statute that we created forced them to be in violation. Their agreement, their bargaining agreement, forces them to be out of compliance with our state statute. So what we are doing with this amendment is that we are saying that the employer has to make that payment to employees who are terminated or who voluntarily leave their employee on the next usual practice or regularly scheduled pay period or at a time specified under the terms of a collaborative bargaining agreement if such a thing exists for that employer and their employees. That is in sum total is what this bill does. Last year it passed out of this committee without a nay vote with the other side, and that's the end of that story. So, Madam Chairman, I would take any questions if there are any.
Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Wanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 92 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 92 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 70. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 70, introduced by Federal Natural Resource, Occupational Safety and Health Administration Action, an act relating to the administration of government. Madam Chairwoman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 70, Occupational Safety and Health Administration Actions, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, Laux, excused, Representative Clausen, signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
Chairman Greer.
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises report, to do so with the recommendation that Bill number 70 do pass, and I will turn the reading of the bill over to, I should remember this, the gentleman from House District 57.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Chairman Greer. This bill is a response to a ruling by an agency of the federal government that starts with an O, and then a federal court case that overturned that new rule. One of our select committees sponsored the bill, and it is proceeded through the committee process through one of our standing committees. The federal government agency that starts with an O set a new rule that fertilizer dealers will no longer be classified as retailers in transactions involving anhydrous ammonia sales to farmers. So suddenly there were some fertilizer dealers that had to comply with this new rule, and there was then a federal court case that was brought, and the federal court ruled that the federal agency that starts with an O that brought this rule did not follow the proper rulemaking process and struck down the rule, and no other federal courts granted cert, so that decision stands. And so this piece of legislation is a response to these illegal federal actions by a federal agency that starts with an O and saying that we're gonna fight similar actions. So moving into the bill now, page 2, paragraph 4, we're adding new language to statute saying that the agency of the federal government that starts with an O that I've been talking about has expanded beyond its authority, And then in paragraph 5, it adds the agency starting with an O to that language, saying that when rulemaking and other actions of the federal of that agency, that they're resting on questionable congressional authority. In paragraph B, it also adds that agency that starts with an O. And then in section C, it lays out that the Attorney General can seek action against this federal agency and adds the agency in question. So basically what we're doing here is we're saying that this agency that starts with an O has overstepped its bounds and giving our Attorney General authority to act and to fight these actions by this agency. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Greer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 70 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 70 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 96. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 96, introduced by Representative Greer, Microbrewery Permits, an act relating to microbrewery permits. Madam Chairwoman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 96, Microbrewery Permits, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, Laux, Representative Klassen, excused. Signed, Representative Laux, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Vice Chairman Laux?
Madam Speaker, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation, the bill number 96 of a due pass. For explanation of bill, I'll turn it over to the good chairman from House District 27.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chairman. So House Bill 96 are some changes to our microbrewery permit, some expansion of their authority. And it has two components to it. The first one you'll find on page number 2 with the new language that's added. And what it does is it just allows for an additional dispensing room or mechanism that is, and we use this term, adjacent, but it's on the premises owned by the microbrewer. And so some of these microbreweries, one in particular that I'm very much aware of, has just a very small tap room, but has large events throughout the year. And this would allow them to have a second dispensing area outside to help deal with the crowds during that period of time. And just a nice consideration within our statutes to allow them to have better access to grow their business and to prosper and succeed. The second component of the bill I will not spend a great deal of time on because there will be a Committee of the Whole amendment just gutting that component of it. But the second component of the bill lays out and gives authority for microbrewers to have satellite facilities throughout the state. And so with that general overview, I think what I'll do right now is step down and then allow the bringer of the Committee of the Whole Amendment to speak.
We're on the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 now, Representative Ayer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I hope you ladies and gentlemen can appreciate the irony of what is about to happen. You have a Mormon boy from Bridger Valley serving on the Minerals Committee about to talk about microbreweries. As Chairman Greer said, the second part of this bill dealt with, I move the amendment number 1 to House Bill 96.
Go on, Representative Ayer.
As President Greer said, this bill is split into two parts, and the second part deals with satellite areas where the dispensing of malt beverages can take place at satellite locations. There was some testimony brought before our committee that indicated this may trigger some difficulties with interstate commerce and may open up a can of worms that we would rather not go into. And so with that brief explanation, I'll just stand for questions. One more thing I might mention, I think this still does accomplish the major part of what the bill was intended to do.
We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment fails. We're back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Without that amendment, I cannot support the bill. The satellite breweries would definitely put us into a position with violating some federal laws on breweries. And the other issue would be, if you open this issue up, you're inviting some very large players in the brewery business. One has a major brewery just to the south of us on Interstate 25. And they would be able to come in and totally blow away our little guys because of that failed amendment. So with that, I just feel strongly that this just shouldn't be moved forward unless there's some other considerations on the second reading. I used to own and operate a microbrewery, and this would just do harm to all of our brewers, the craft brewers across the state.
Representative Crank.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I have to agree with the last representative. There was testimony during the committee meeting that this will open up the issue of basically breweries being able to have bars, up to three bars in the state that can only sell their only product there. And it would be open the state up to litigation, and the state would be paying the litigation, not the brewery. So respectfully ask that you not support the bill at this time.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm in favor of this bill. When I think about kind of economic diversification, when I think about it in really big ways and then in small ways, and this is one of those small ways, that we have companies, small businesses, microbreweries that have popped up in many of our communities. Not only that, we have competitions even in certain communities over the local breweries and what's the best brew of X, Y, and Z. And I love it. I love it. This is new 21st century economic development. And our statutes right now limit our microbreweries. And this is one way to kind of expand that new development. And so I'm in favor.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Chairman. Madam Chairman, I think is correct. Thank you. Thank you for the discussion, folks. Do this for me, please. Vote this bill through. okay? Because the first component, what I'm talking about with having the additional dispensing room, is very important for our micro brewers. It helps them deal with events that they have. It allows them to be able to get more of their product dispensed. It helps with their cash flow. It helps with their business plans. It just generally helps them overall. The second component on the Committee of the Whole amendment that you voted down, which I appreciate the support. However, that second, that Committee of the Whole amendment, we will bring back as a second reading amendment to address the concerns. And they are a legitimate concern. That we are getting involved with the Tidewater laws, I believe is the correct term of that. Is Tidewater, Tide? Anyway, I'm saying that. Yeah, I'm saying that incorrectly. Sorry, but and it would open up this industry in Wyoming to attack from outside the borders by microbrewers, not by the big guys, but by the larger microbrewers, and allow them to bring satellite facilities into the state. Okay, so we do need to fix that component. But do me a favor, do my constituents a favor, vote this through. We'll come back on the second reading and clean up the component that's giving everybody a concern. Thank you.
Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just to follow up on that, I definitely would trust the chairman of that committee on this, and I totally agree with the one portion that's in the bill as far as patios and extending their abilities all across the state. I think that's a great idea. But the interstate commerce part of that, and not to the minority minority floor leader, is that the correct title? So to that point, this would do just the without that amendment would do just the opposite, because that big brewery to the south of us, they have within their businesses have those craft breweries that they own that are well hidden, and they own some of the big brand names, and they'd be able to march right in here and really do harm to our craft brewers that are really trying to make and do, and it is good, the economic diversity. I totally agree. So with that, I'll help support and trust you, so which never was in doubt, never was in doubt.
Are you ready? A question having been called, all those in favor of Representative Louth's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 96 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 96 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 142. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 142, introduced by Representative Connolly, Governmental Immunity Waiver for Healthcare Facilities, an act relating to the Wyoming Governmental Claims Act. Madam Chairwoman, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 142, Governmental Entity Immunity Waiver for Healthcare Facilities, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Byrd, Crank, Ayer, Gray, Greer, Henderson, Lindholm, Laux, excused, Clausen. Signed, Representative Greer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Greer?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You would think as much as I've been up here, I could run that better. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 142 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to the sponsor, our good minority floor leader.
Representative Connolly. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Okay, I bring you House Bill 142 and ask for your favorable consideration. Friends, in order to understand this bill, you've got a handout that just came out. It should be kind of at the top of your box. This bill is not intuitive to understand what's going on unless you have this. And as you're grabbing that, I'll just tell you that this is the second bill in the past half hour that we saw the wisdom of passing out of here, I think unanimously last year, and the other side, okay. All right. So in order to, so what we're going to be talking about are tort claims and the Government Claims Act. But the important element is to kind of understand what we have in Title 35 regarding healthcare facilities. So this is our title that looks into healthcare facilities, and we have a section of it that says that, and I'll just read it, healthcare facilities subject to or licensed pursuant to this act shall not harass, threaten, discipline, or in any manner discriminate against any resident, patient, or employee of any healthcare facility for reporting to the division a violation of any state or federal law or rule and regulation. But any employee found to have knowingly made a false report to the division shall be subject to disciplinary action, including but not limited to dismissal. All right, this is called a whistleblower provision. So what happened is a constituent worked at a government-controlled healthcare facility, actually here in town, and believed that a resident was being mistreated, okay, and was fired. He reported it and was fired. Okay, he turned to the statute and said, that's unfair, went to an attorney. And you can read the statute. The statute right there says that, all right, you should, you know, if that's what you're doing, right, you shouldn't be fired or you shouldn't be discriminated against. And the attorney rightfully said, you have no cause of action. Right? You cannot bring a claim under Title 35-2910B. Right? Instead, the reason being is because there is no exception in the Governmental Claims Act. There has to be an exception under Title I, the Governmental Claims Act. Okay, so what you have as the bill before you is exactly what that exception is. So 139-109, the bill, just adds to the Governmental Claims Act that a governmental entity is liable for damages resulting from bodily injury, wrongful death, et cetera, by the negligence of public employees while acting within their scope of the... Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. I'm reading you the beginning. All right. B, page 2. A governmental entity is liable for damages resulting from a violation of 35-2910B, okay, which is what I just read to you. We have to have that in the Governmental Claims Act in order for there to be any cause of action under that whistleblower statute. So in this particular case, that whistleblower couldn't bring forth a claim because we didn't have this in the governmental claim section. Adding this just allows for that whistleblower to have his or her day in court. It doesn't guarantee that the person wins. It just allows the person to bring forth the claim. And so with that, I'll take any questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Greer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 142 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 142 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 32. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Madam Chairman.
Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Madam Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion has carried.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, our Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 54, amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 131, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 80, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 92, recommended do pass. House Bill 70, recommended do pass. House Bill 96, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 142, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Steinmetz. Chairwoman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Congratulations, Representative Steinmetz. Members, I'll take a quick privilege before I recognize the Majority Floor Leader before we adjourn for the day and committee announcements. Tomorrow, as you know, we will inaugurate a new president, and I believe that is 10 a.m. Mountain Time when that begins. And so Majority Floor Leader will have a motion here, and so we're going to do business a little bit different. We're going to start a little bit early. We'll recess for a little bit, and then we'll come back in and continue our work. So with that, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 5:30 a.m. Oh, no, I believe it was 9:30 a.m., Mr. Speaker. Tomorrow, Friday, January 20th, 2017.
Okay, before I call the question on that motion, we have a couple of business items. First, standing committee reports.
House Bill 88. Excuse me. House Bill 88, introduced by Representative Ponnell, Background Checks, Enterprise Technology Services, an act relating to the Department of Enterprise Technology Services. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 88, Background Checks, Enterprise Technology Services, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Baker, Biteman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Ponnell, Salazar, Winters. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman. House Bill 90, introduced by Representative Larson, Concealed Weapons Military Family Applicants, an act relating to concealed weapons. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 90, Concealed Weapons Military Family Applicants, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Baker, Biteman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pannell, Salazar, excused, Representatives Pelkey and Winters, signed Representative Kirkbride, Chairman. House Bill 97, introduced by Representative Greer, Wyoming Uniform Transfers to Minors Act, amendments, an act relating to the Wyoming Uniform Transfers to Minors Act. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 97, Wyoming Uniform Transfers to Minors Act amendments, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Baker, Biteman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pannell, Salazar, excused, Representatives Pelkey and Winters, signed Representative Kirkbride, Chairman. House Bill 11, introduced by Revenue, Discounted Cash Flow Implementation Process, an act relating to the Department of Revenue. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 11, Discounted Cash Flow Implementation Process, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, Wilson, signed Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 23, introduced by Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, Secretary of State's Office, amendments, an act relating to the Secretary of State. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 23, Secretary of State's Office amendments, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, Wilson, signed Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 66, introduced by Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, Yellowstone License Plates, an act relating to motor vehicle license plates. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 66, Yellowstone License Plates, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, Wilson. Noes, Representative Nicholas. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 37, introduced by Education, Teacher Accountability, an act relating to teacher accountability. Mr. Speaker, your committee number four, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 37, Teacher Accountability, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Bovee, Brown, Flitner, Freeman, Hunt, Kenner, Northrop, Paxton, Piperinen. Signed, Representative Northrop, Chairman. House Bill 76, introduced by Representative Allen, American Indian Education Program, an act relating to public education. Mr. Speaker, your committee number four, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 76, American Indian Education Program, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Bovee, Brown, Flitner, Freeman, Hunt, Kenner, Northrop, Paxton, and Piperinen. Signed, Representative Northrop, Chairman. House Bill 77, introduced by Representative Zwanitzer, In-State Tuition, AmeriCorps Service, an act relating to higher education. Mr. Speaker, your committee number four, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 77, In-State Tuition, AmeriCorps Service, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Bovee, Brown, Flitner, Freeman, Hunt, Kenner, Northrop, Paxton, and Piperinen. Signed, Representative Northrop. Chairman. House Bill 93, introduced by Representative Larson. WICHE Repayment Program, Veterinary Medicine Students. An act relating to the Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education Repayment Program. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 93, WICHE Repayment Program, Veterinary Medicine Students, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Bovee, Brown, Flitner, Freeman, Hunt, Kenner, Northrop, Paxton, and Piperinen. Signed, Representative Northrop. Chairman. House Bill 86, introduced by Representative Walter, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, an act relating to water development projects. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 86, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blake, Gray, Haley, Henderson, Hunt, Larson, McKim, Steinmetz, and excused Representative Claussen. Signed, Representative Hunt, Vice Chairman. House Bill 119, introduced by Representative Kirkbride. Senior Citizen Districts, Use of Revenues, an act relating to senior citizen service districts. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 119, Senior Citizen Districts, Use of Revenues, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Ayes, Representatives Barlow, Clem, Dayton, Garrew, Hallinan, Halverson, McGuire, Sweeney, excused, Representative Lone. Signed, Representative Barlow, Chairman.
Messages from the Senate.
January 19, 2017. Message number 127. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 32, Peace Officer Recordings, Ayes 25, Noes 5. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 128. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 34, Student Personal Digital Information Protection Act, Ayes 30. Signed, Senate Chief Clerk Ellen Thompson. Message number 129. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File number 35, Virtual Education. Ayes 29, Noes 1. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 130. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 42, Opiate Overdose Emergency Treatment. Ayes 30. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 131. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 62, Telepharmacy Amendments. Ayes 28, Noes 2. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 132. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 78, Federal Natural Resource Policy Account. Ayes 30. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 133. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 81, Circuit Court Judge Salaries. Ayes 25, Noes 5. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 134. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 2, Legislative Apportions. Ayes 28, noes 2. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Committee announcements, Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We got a little ahead of ourselves. Committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands, and Water Resources, would like to re-refer House Bill 86 to Committee number 2, Appropriations.
House Bill 86 is re-referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations. Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee education number 4 would like to re-refer House Bill 76 to Committee number 2, Appropriations.
House Bill 76 is re-referred to Committee number 2, Appropriations. Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, and Wildlife, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in H-38 to consider the following bills. House Bill 121, Fishing Licenses. House Bill 130, Harvest of Trophy Game and Fur-Bearing Animals, and H.J. 004, Anti-Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction Resolution.
Thank you, Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet Friday, January 20th, 10 minutes after noon recess in H-38, where we will look at House Bill 101, House Bill 126, and House Bill 133. Remember, 10 minutes after noon. Thank you.
Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your indefatigable Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet upon adjournment in Jonah Room H-38 to discuss House Bill 147, Release of Arrested Persons Under the Influence.
Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet upon adjournment and we'll discuss House Bill 78, 52, 65, 117, and 120.
Chairman Greer.
Mr. Speaker, your Minerals Committee will meet tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., in H-37. We will be considering House Bill 62, Immunity for Drug Overdose Reporting, House Bill 143, Court Reporting Service Providers, House Bill 144, New Trial Based on Actual Innocence. And then also for our committee members, we will be jointly meeting with the Senate in L-54 upon adjournment. If you can attend for some informational meeting, informational information with DEQ. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chairman Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, will also be meeting for same said informational meeting shortly upon adjournment. In L-54, so thank you much.
Majority Floor Leader Miller.
Mr. Speaker, your general file list for tomorrow is House Bill 32, 73, 88, 90, 97, 11, 23, 66, 37, 77, 93, 119, and 36. And, Mr. Speaker, I will move again that House adjourn until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, Friday, January 20th, 2017.
Okay, thank you. Before I call on the vote on that motion, I just want to remind members that there is a mandatory form that you must fill out by the end of the month and file with our Secretary of State, down used to be downstairs, wherever the temporary, I know where it's at on 2020 carry, thank you. But these forms, if you don't have them in your mailbox, we have them right up here. The reading clerk has these forms. So make sure, without fail, we all have to fill this out. So that's that reminder. I want to specifically mention we've had some just tremendous work. I mean, our Appropriations Committee, I left here last night. They were here till after 8:30. So that means the staff, a fiscal staff, is here till 10 o'clock. And back at it early again this morning, and the work continues. And we're only in the first quarter, and But I really just appreciate the tone and the quality of debate, and really we're starting to really come together and I think sharpen the sword around here, and I really appreciate the work that's being done by all of you, this collective work. And so once again, trust the process. So important. So with that said, we will take on the majority floor leader's motion. You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The House is adjourned until tomorrow, Friday, January 20th at 9:30 a.m.